When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi everyone, just a heads up that I know that some people often listen to Sentimental Garbage and they just are a fan of the podcast and they don't always know what we're talking about or the movie or the themes that will come up. So just to say that Stepmom is a movie that has a lot of themes around cancer and death, and that might not be an ideal listen for everyone this week, so maybe wait till next week if you don't want to hear that right now. But it's an amazing episode, we have a lot of laughs, we do cry a lot, and I hope you like it. Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline, and it's finally legal to smoke dope, you just have to have cancer. Joining me is a limp dick who doesn't even know what snowblowing is. It's Lou Taylor.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
I saw you while I was doing the intro just jittering on the other side of the recording.
So I was excited. Like, I wonder if she'll say he doesn't even know what snowblowing is. And
still,
I'm so glad.
I first watched this movie when I was about 8 years old. I'm now 33 years old and I still had to Google what snowblowing is.
I just Googled it this morning.
Disgusting.
Oh my God. If somebody told my daughter,
I would have them guillotined.
I don't want her to know that because she's obviously going to look it up when she's older.
Yeah. When I first saw this movie when I was really, really young, and like, I have such a history with this film.
Same.
So what... You know how, like, at the end of school, people would bring in videos to watch on the last day?
Yeah. Oh,
so, at my school, St. Bridget's Eglantine in Cork, every fucking end of term, whether it was half term, summer break, winter break, whatever, the same two movies would get brought in by this girl, and we would vote between... It's like she was the only person who owned a VHS tape. It was so strange. Such power she had. It was either A Little Princess or Stepmom.
Oh, wow.
And we would all vote. And as when we were younger, it was A Little Princess. And when we were older, it was Stepmom. And it was like actually one of my first real lessons in Sentimental Garbage, which is how much women love to cry together.
Yes.
Because both movies would make us howl for days.
Yeah.
Both 100%. Are great. But like as we got older, Stepmom became like this dominant thing. And I think between the ages of about 8 and 13, I think I've seen this movie maybe 17 times.
Yeah, same. So when I first started watching it, it was almost like, it's not the film that you can binge watch because it's so sad.
Yeah.
But you have, like, it's almost like if I need a good cry, just growing up, I would just put Stepmom on. Do you know what I mean? And I've watched it so many times, but I'm sort of like, now I'm an adult, I'm like, why did I watch it so much? Because it is so sad. But it's such a great film.
Unbelievably sad.
It meant so much to me growing up. Like, it was just the best.
It's interesting because I haven't really done a lot of big criers on this podcast before. I've done Titanic, obviously, which is a big crier. But why is it that we love these things that make us cry? And why are we attracted to them so young? And I think for Stepmom, it being such a thing for little girls, it like found this weird audience in little girls because so much of it is about these two women like fighting over the heart of an 11-year-old girl.
Yes, because we were the age of the girl.
Yeah.
And you could really put yourself in the girl's shoes, I think.
And also because she's such a little bitch.
I mean, I was going to go into this anyway, but like she didn't warm the coggles. You know what I mean?
The coggles?
She just didn't like... I didn't associate with her as in her character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I thought she was a bit of a bitch.
Totally.
And
now as a 30-something, I'm like able to see the traumatized, sensitive kid that this poor film is happening to.
Yeah, but as a kid,
I was like, well, I'd be really nice to Julia Roberts if she was my mum. And I would love getting a puppy and she has horses and fuck her.
And now I watch it back, I'm like, I was that little girl. I was like a little tearaway bitch.
Yeah.
My parents split up when I was that age, and I like watching that now. I'm like, yeah, I was her, but as a kid, I was like, I'm not her.
So, did you have a stepmom experience?
I have a stepmom, but I didn't have they didn't marry like when I was young or anything like that. Mm-hmm. My dad had like a girlfriend, and then he met another woman who he is married to now. But it wasn't. I wouldn't say it was the same of me like having to move in. I actually had more of a stepdad in that respect. And I was a little bitch to him.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay. So when this movie came along for you, if you don't mind me asking, where were you on the Jenna Malone trajectory?
So the film came out in what, like
98? Yeah.
That is when my parents split up. So I was, I was 12 when they split up. So I was watching this at the same time. Yeah. I was going through all that same stuff. It was like, that's probably why it like meant so much to me.
Yeah. Oh, you poor thing.
I know. So I had more of a, like, I had more of an issue with my stepdad than I did with any of my dad's partners, weirdly. Mm. And I love him now. Like, you know, we get on great. But like at the time.
And if you don't mind me asking, what was it about that that was more hurtful than your dad's partners?
He was like a, he was a bit of a character, and I was from quite a small town.
Yeah.
And he would like, he used to wear like sarongs, and he had, and he had long grey hair and a long grey beard, and he was very like hippie DJ.
Oh my
he was like
God.
A psychedelic trance DJ. My dad was like,
I'm so glad I asked this question.
My dad's like Hugh Grant in Four Weddings and a Funeral. So yeah. I'd had the opposite.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And now this like really big, loud personality, Gandalf had basically come into my life. And I was like,
trans Gandalf.
Trans Gandalf. The guy like that's dressed as Gandalf dancing at like Glastonbury or whatever. That was like him.
Oh my God.
And I was too young to appreciate it and how cool it was. And I was just like, he's not my dad. Like, I didn't want people to think he was my dad because he was a bit different. But now I'm like, I don't care. He's great. That's fun.
That's so fun. Mm. Oh, but I can totally, because like when you're that age, particularly 11, 12, and like it's portrayed so amazingly in this movie by Jenna Malone as Anna, like anything that makes you stand out in any way is so painful. Like the film literally opens with her being like, it's purple shirt day. Where's my purple shirt?
Yeah, and you have to fit in. And I didn't. Yeah, yeah. And that was the point is like, I, compared to all my friends' families, who none of my friends' parents got divorced. I think it was me and one other girl. And I really was like, I just wanted the normal family setup. That's all I wanted.
Yeah.
And then, I know.
Oh, no.
Best in shit. It's the therapy sesh for me.
I know. I knew this was a crier, but I thought, you know, it's like early on. I'm still feeling very moved for you.
I know. And then like, but yeah, so I think, and also just to add, my mum, who's Canadian, has red curly hair and looks very much like Susan Sarandon.
Oh my God.
So watching this film, I'm like, oh my God. This is me. This is me.
This is you.
And my sister's 4 or 5 years younger than me, so it was like a similar age gap.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I just...
I'm fine, by the way.
I know. You clearly, you're fine. Thriving.
Well, I don't know.
Thriving and gorgeous. But it really makes me think that there was such a proliferation of divorce content during the 90s, and I do like, and this is directed by Chris Columbus, whose other huge movie, obviously the Home Alone movies, but also Mrs. Doubtfire, which is such a divorce text, you know. Yeah.
And how hard it is for the kids.
Like, I think he's known as there's the big profile on him that called him a very sentimental director. It's like, he's such a master of like family and emotion, and like also the micro relationships that happen within family.
Yeah.
Like, to me, this is a slight sort of segue into Home Alone, but like the bit in Home, because I'm the youngest of a big family.
Yeah.
The bit in Home Alone that makes me so upset is when,
are you going to cry? I'm just going to cry.
Is that bit where, oh my God.
Oh, Cameron, I want to give you a cuddle.
This has really surprised me. The bit where, you know, Catherine O'Hara has finally made it home and she's gone through the poker bus and everything. Yeah. And then she just like comes through the door and Kevin's there, and they just like stand and they look at each other for a minute. And there's like this moment where she's like not sure whether this mistake she's made as a parent has like fucked up her child forever.
Yeah.
Because like there's like a blankness over his face that's so, it's like such a mature moment for such a silly film.
Yeah, 100%.
And then it just breaks and like,
she's panicked.
And she's so scared. And she's like, it's almost like a We Need to Talk About Kevin moment like, is my kid changed forever?
Like, he's been home, what, 3 days, 4 days on his own.
And then they just break and they hug each other. And
he's the same.
And he's the same. He's just a little guy.
Oh
my God, that is
I actually never really thought about that scene like too much in that way before.
It really gets me now. Yeah. And I think as well, because they have this like maybe a minute of screen time where they're alone together and then the kids all, everyone else comes bursting
and it's
in.
It's just a big family moment. Yeah.
But I remember feeling like all I ever wanted when I was young was just to be alone with my mum because somebody else always had her attention.
Because you had such a big family.
Yeah.
And did you, you've got that since? Tell me you've
yeah,
got
I
that.
Was literally... Tell me you've got that. Yeah, I was literally, I was just telling you that I was in Spain last week and it was shite because it was bad weather. But my mom was there as well. My parents were both there and I had like a week with like just me and my parents like fantasizing about being an only child, which was always my dream.
Yeah. Oh, was it?
Well, so I love my siblings, obviously, but you know, I think...
So we've got I'm the oldest. So okay. I mean, obviously, I fantasized as a child about my sister not being there.
Yeah.
I was like, pretty pissed off when she arrived. But but yeah, now I actually think I would like an older sibling. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, it is good. I'd like a younger one, I think. I thought I did. You know? Yeah. But no, actually, more I wanted to just be with my parents alone, I think.
That's so sweet. And you got it.
Yeah.
Last week.
I have to go to Spain, though.
Did you have that moment with your mom where she looked panicked and looked at you as if to be like, oh my God, have I screwed her up forever?
But this is all to say that Chris Columbus really understands that in every family, it is not just one relationship, but there are many micro dynamics that are constantly shifting. And you see it in Mrs. Doubtfire, you see it in Home Alone, and you see it in this as well.
Like the relationship in Mrs. Doubtfire between like the oldest girl is very different to the youngest girl.
Yeah.
And he gets that right.
Totally. And that moment in Mrs. Doubtfire as well, this is just a Chris Columbus special. the moment in Mrs. Doubtfire as well, where like there's a kind of understanding that like the two older kids figure out what's going on. And then it's like, oh, don't tell Maddie, she's too little and
she
her brain can't handle it. Mm. I think that's what's so good about Chris Columbus is that he understands how much kids can handle, which is a little more than you think, but not too much. He must be. All men in Hollywood are.
I mean, he knows a lot about it.
He knows a lot about it. He must do.
Or maybe his parents got divorced, but yeah. I don't know. Divorce wasn't massive probably for his parents.
Yeah. I honestly don't know much about him personally.
I know that I think his mum died of cancer and he dedicated film to her.
Yeah.
Oh,
Chris. I love how sad we are already this morning.
Really early in the morning.
Really early in the morning.
Let's just go and have a cry. Come on. With a stranger.
With a stranger. Yeah.
No, we've met once drunkenly.
Yeah. I remember thinking last night being like, I'm going to meet a total stranger tomorrow and talk about a movie that makes me cry more than any other movie.
Because
it is like the terms of endearment of our generation, I think. I think every generation has a big crying movie, you know? Yeah. Like Love Story was another one for people. And this is it for us. I think, and like it performed really poorly on a critical level.
It did. I was looking at the Rotten Tomatoes score, and it's like 44%.
Yeah,
but I sometimes don't trust Rotten Tomatoes
not at all.
Have you seen Sister Act 2?
Yeah,
that's one of the best films of all time, and specifically Sister Act 2. Not the first one, but the second one. And that's like 13% or something on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's like,
you're
what?
Giving Lauren goddamn Hill.
I know.
13%.
Whoopi and Lauren.
Just the minute they came up with a subtitle, Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit.
Back in the Habit. Come on.
That is already 100% Rotten Tomatoes.
Give it more.
Give it more.
The music alone.
It's like...
The voice. The voice.
Ridiculous.
Anyway.
But to get back to Stepmom...
We can do that one another time.
So the sort of the plot recap to anybody who hasn't seen this in a long time, because honestly, I had not seen this in maybe 20 years, like until last night.
Oh, really? I saw it a couple of years ago. But...
Yeah, my entire frame of reference had completely shifted in a really interesting way because as we just said, like I was watching it as Anna before and now we're about the same age as the Julia Roberts character, right? Mm-hmm. And we are both childless women living in a city in creative professions and like who are prioritizing. I don't know what your hopes are. I hope to have a kid ... someday, but I'm not like actively planning for it. And we don't really know whether it was something she ever wanted for her life, but regardless, she has it.
She's in it.
She's in it. And the movie opens with like, she's woken up late in her amazing loft apartment that she shares with her old boyfriend, Ed Harris.
In Soho.
And we'll quickly pause to ask, do you fancy Ed Harris in this movie?
No, I'm not a big Ed Harris. It's not that I don't like him. He just doesn't do it for me. He's got lovely eyes, actually.
Yeah, beautiful
I was watching,
eyes.
Like, wow, he's got really nice eyes. And my sister, who I was chatting to, saying I just rewatched it because we used to watch it a lot together. Mm. She was like, oh, yeah, it's the film I fancy Ed Harris the most in. And I was like, interesting. I've never fancied Ed Harris. Do you fancy him?
No, I think he... I can see why she does, I guess. When I was trying to think of who else could be in that role that would have made him like, oh yeah, this would be the man who you derail your life for. Like, he is lovely.
He's lovely.
He feels like really sexy and really kind and like a genuinely lovely man to her.
And like, he'd be a very good lover.
Yeah.
He's got that intensity.
Totally. It actually seems very realistic in that, like, you often see like gorgeous young women with older men and then like, you're like, what the fuck's going on there? Must be rich. And he is rich.
Yeah. But he is attractive. But he's
an attractive person, but I don't find him to be an attractive man.
No,
I
wouldn't meet him or see him in the street and be like, I really fancy that guy.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
However, I might get to know him and be like, I really fancy that guy.
Yeah. And I think that's probably what happened.
Yeah. I mean, how did they meet?
How did they? He's a lawyer.
And she's a photographer.
Which I can't wait to get into photography career. But anyway, so they met somehow and then she decided that she was going to jack in her amazing life to look after his kids. A lot.
Like, rather a lot. Like, you don't see much of their relationship. It's the only... Yeah. It's my only bugbear about... Like, I'm like, I don't know why she's with him at this point because you don't see that much of it.
The only time you really see them alone together is when they're in the kitchen and Anna keeps interrupting them by prank calling and when he proposes to her, which is very beautiful.
Yeah, that's a nice one.
It's really nice. For me, I think that's why he's so good in this role, in that there's such... a warmth emanating from him and between the two characters, and the movie is about those two women. It's about these two amazing female performances that he is the definition of a great supporting cast member,
and he does it really well, to be fair.
Yeah.
Even though you don't see much of their relationship, the bits that you do see, you're not
in doubt, really.
No, you're like, this guy, he loves his kids.
Yeah.
He's obviously a nice guy and he still really cares for his ex-wife.
Yeah. Yeah, and their scenes together are great as well.
Yeah, 100%.
I just think it's so well written, this movie.
I do, and I'm so... It annoys me that it got badly reviewed.
And I remember hearing something about Mrs. Doubtfire where it was a conversation between Robin Williams and Chris Columbus where he says, like, he's never going to talk shit about Sally Field. You know what I mean? It's like he's only ever going to advocate for himself. He's never... It's like... It was very careful, basically, that this was going to be a movie watched by children of divorce and that it was going to provide a kind of a roadmap for those children.
Yeah.
And this feels like a movie where it's providing a roadmap for the parents.
Yes.
Where it's actually very... The scenes that involve the kids are so careful.
Yeah.
You know, even like right up into explaining the concept of death to them.
Yeah,
you know, it's like... it's like so careful.
Yeah, Yeah, it's for the parents. I agree. I'd agree with
that. And that thing of like, and they're always honest. They never lie to their kids.
Which is, I think, great.
Yeah. Like, there's a point where the kids are with Ed Harris and they're like, did you fall out of love with mommy? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I did.
And that gets me because the reason that my parents split up was literally that. It was, and anytime I have the conversation with my mom,
yeah,
even though she's moved on, she's with someone else, it's like she moved over to another country to be with a man that essentially fell out of love with her.
To be with Rafe Gandalf.
Yeah, to be with Rafe Gandalf. No, she moved, she met my dad, Hugh Grant. She moved over to the UK and then she's with my dad for like, what, 14 years? And then the only problem was that he just wasn't in love with her anymore.
Yeah.
And that's really sad. And she wanted it to work, you know what I mean? It was very much, I think... Susan Sarandon in this movie, I think you can tell that she wanted it to work.
Yeah, because she's like, again, a perfect role. Like, she's just a woman who makes things work.
Yeah.
She's just really good at that.
I mean, the casting in this movie is incredible.
So the lore of this movie is that Susan Sarandon and Julie Roberts were very good friends and admired each other and wanted to make a movie where the two of them would have these powerhouse performances and they could do it together and they got it made together.
Yeah.
And it does make me think, it's like, it's still really hard to get movies that feature... like dominant emotional female roles.
Yes.
That are just about these women trying to live alongside one another, you know?
I know, and they complement each other in the film.
Yeah. Like, I can't believe, like, you know how some people say that they have kind of like a tin ear for comedy, like they can't really hear, like they're not really good at watching comedy because they don't really understand what's funny sometimes.
Yeah.
Like Mark Kermode says this a lot, and that he feels like he's a tin ear for comedy. I feel like I have a tin ear for melodrama. Like scenes that other people find very melodramatic or over the top, I'm like, no, that's real.
Yeah.
Like I find this movie to be so real and not melodramatic at all, even though people do often class it that way.
I don't find this movie melodramatic.
Yeah.
I think it, I understand that people are like, it's really cookie cutter.
Yeah.
Like, I get that, but I don't think it's melodramatic.
No, I feel like it's very...
I think it's really realistic.
Yeah.
The performances are really realistic.
It's obviously not realistic in that, like, I feel like everyone, you know, always has the right thing to say in those scenes with the kids, but only because they're thinking very carefully.
Messy. It's not like a messy real life, but it's
but
the relationships are fairly realistic.
They feel so real, and they're obviously the richest people in the world.
Yeah, of course.
But it's like, I think it's like so...
Just makes for a good setup though, doesn't it?
It does. That house that Susan Sarandon lives in.
Yeah.
Oh, are those her horses?
Yeah, that's...
When they go horse riding in the middle of the night, I'm like, so they're your horses?
Well, they live in an old farmhouse.
Yeah.
So maybe they are. But then he's got like a high-flying job. Like, why would they live in an old farmhouse if she was in publishing and he was a lawyer? I don't know. That doesn't make that much sense to me, but...
Yeah, I get the feeling...
Or maybe there's horses down the road.
Yeah. Maybe they're down the road.
She knows the person down the road.
Yeah, and she can just come and go with the horses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
In my sort of private lore of the movie, she comes from like a family, I think.
She comes from money.
Yeah. And that were like, you know, sort of aristocratic but countrysidey type family, you know? Like
I could get on board with that.
Like Jacqueline Kennedy's sister, you know, like...
She's from like a big dog family.
Yeah, that's in my private head.
She's Jackie Kennedy's sister. Let's go with that.
Yeah, she's Lee Kennedy. Yeah, and
or her cousin or something. She's a cousin.
Yeah, she's like a distant, like, it's like, oh, you know, oh wow, I only ever met Jackie once, but you know, we're cousins. Like,
but they've still got the money in the family.
100%. That's how I see it, and I feel like that's like a house that's in her family.
Yes,
and that's why she still lives in it.
Maybe it was her parents' house.
Because in a real divorce, that house would get sold and they'd both live in flats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or she'd downsize at least.
Yeah. So in my head, it's a family home.
Yes. Okay. So, she's inherited it.
Yeah. Now part of the lore.
Yeah. And the horses down
family
the
horses.
Yeah. They're always there. Who's taking care of the horses? Her?
I don't know.
Anyway.
Anyway, there's horses. We're still in Julia Roberts' morning routine. It's all like she's trying to get the kids ready. The 11-year-old's a bitch. Then the young guy, the young kid.
Perfect.
It's the most amazing child actor performance.
The only sort of really funny, because it's billed as like a comedy drama.
Yeah.
The only really funny bits is the little kid.
Yeah.
He's great.
He's really buttressing the comedy in the movie. He's so great. But he's also so like how little boys are.
Yeah.
Like, even that he's
just daft. He's daft.
He's just silly. Daft and silly. Yeah.
He wants to be a magician. I was watching it because I watched it last week with my boyfriend. And,
yeah.
And my boyfriend wanted to be a magician when he was young. And I was like, well, that's you.
Oh. Yeah, I felt it like... I was texting my sister last night and I was like, oh, I'm watching Stepmom. You should watch it again. And she was like, I am never in my life going to watch that movie because my sister is both a cancer survivor and she has two children who are 11 and 7.
Oh my God.
She's like, why in the fuck would I ever watch that movie?
Never watch it.
Never mind.
I know. My boyfriend adored, he'd seen me watch it before because there's this funny story where when we used to live with flatmates.
Yeah.
This girl moved in with us, who I'm very good friends with now, but I didn't know her that well when she moved in with us. And I very brazenly decided to watch Stepmom one day in the main living room that everybody used and everybody was in and out. And it was a kitchen living room. So people would come in to make their food. And I'm sat on the couch watching Stepmom. And I am crying, but like loud, like sobbing at the TV, not even hiding it. And like, I don't know this girl that well. And she's just moved in. And she's like, who the fuck is this girl just sat sobbing on the couch.
Oh my God.
And she felt really awkward. And I was just brazenly watching Stepmom. So Matt had seen me do that, but he'd never seen it himself. So I made him watch it with me last week. And he was genuinely a bit cross with me that he didn't know he was going to cry as much as he did.
Really?
And he soaked an entire pillow. And he was audibly loud sobbing. And he was like, I feel like I've been to a fucking funeral.
He
cried that
you
much.
You have?
And I was like, because I just didn't think it would affect him how it had affected me my whole life. For some reason, I just thought, oh.
That men would be immune to this somehow.
Yeah, and he wasn't at all. And he was like, I enjoyed it. I'm never watching it ever again. Ever. He was like, I will never watch this again.
God. Gender is a construct, but also it's real.
Yeah.
Because it's like, with a woman, if something makes you cry, you're like, and then I'll put it away for the days that I need it.
Yeah.
Like,
and I'll watch this in a year when I need to.
Yeah.
And he's like, no. He cried so much.
So I watched it all last night while my boyfriend was still out. Not my boyfriend. We're married.
Hubby.
My hubby. Well, Gavin was out. And then he came in when it was ending and I was crying. And he was like, oh yeah, so what's it about? You know? And I was like, I don't need to tell you what it's about. I just need to show you one scene. And the scene I showed him was because he is a creative director and a photographer. I showed him the scene where Julia Roberts goes to work.
Oh my God.
And he was fuming. He was like pacing. He was so angry. That essentially she goes, this is where we get the idea of like, this is who she is in her world. We go straight from the scene where like Susan Sarandon picks up her kids and is like, Isabel, go fuck yourself. Yeah. And then she goes straight into work. She runs into work. She's late. The camera's already set up.
I love this scene. I have to say.
This is genuinely what I thought photography was. This age. We just did like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and like the way it like depicts like advertising and magazine work is so like a child's view. And yeah, it's like these things just stay in your head forever. Like, yeah, that's what that job is. So she's shooting a Valentino print ad. There's all these women in these red dresses. There's the craft services guy who for some reason they're all doting on naturally.
And he's got like plates of cheese and grapes, but he's holding them. I'm doing the thing, but you can't see. But yeah, he's got like plates that he's holding up around his shoulders with his hand like under the trays.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So he's holding them in a way that's very
showy. Yeah, but it's so weird because it's supposed to be like, oh, this is like a natural scene she just stumbled on, but it looks so posed and weird.
She walks in late, she walks in late, and the models who are all wearing red Valentino dresses are eating cheese and grapes off of this little man.
Oh, off of the little man.
The little man. And they're all like having lols and eating, and she sees something.
And
something no one else sees.
The client guy is like, what are you doing? What are you doing? I see something you don't see. And then
This is why you pay me.
So she takes gets me a digital camera, and she gets the camera, takes four shots, and she said, we're done.
I know. So confidently we're done. And everyone's going, what, she hasn't even got the models in yet.
I know.
With the Valentino suits. And they're all waiting. And she's
late. She has a backpack full of floppy disks.
Yes.
And on those floppy disks are some AI of the Valentino suits.
I was obsessed with this. I thought that the technology.
Yeah.
At the time.
Even now when we have incredibly advanced AI and you could literally write into like Midjourney or whatever, like little old Italian man in suit holding grapes, Valentino models around him, and you would get something. It still wouldn't be that quick.
Yeah, because what happens is she loads the pictures up onto the computer and then finds a website or something that has suits
On the floppy disk. Yeah.
Oh, on the floppy disk. And then she clicks a button and then all of a sudden the little man is dressed in a
suit
that fits him perfectly. Like, how has it got his shape right?
This is a bit like Cher's wardrobe in Clueless.
Oh, yes.
Where, like, the technology was so far ahead of the film.
I was obsessed with that as well. It was like, what, I can do this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and then the picture's incredible. And then she's like, well, I don't know if it's incredible, but I thought it was at that
age.
Well,
Valentino were very happy.
Yeah.
It's not the suit, it's the man, or whatever. It's the man makes the suit.
Yeah.
Look what this Valentino suit can do.
And she's done wonders for the advertising campaign.
Yeah. Which, like, I worked in advertising. And the photographer doesn't get to come up with the strap line or the concept for the entire thing. But anyway, we'll move on. She's a great photographer. But essentially, as this movie evolves from here, it's this kind of evolving thing of like, you know, Julia Roberts is not prepared for the role of motherhood, nor does she want to be prepared, yet she is constantly saddled with these kids. Susan Sarandon is obviously very rightfully very embittered that her ex-husband is going out with somebody who's so much younger than him, which, like, even that by itself, you'd be like, fuck this.
Yeah, I think any woman whose ex-husband was going out with someone 10 to 15 years younger than them.
Yeah. And suddenly this woman was being trusted with your kids.
And also Julia Roberts.
And also Julia
fucking
Roberts.
Imagine in 10 years, Gav leaves you for Julia Roberts. Don't. You would be really upset.
Don't come on my podcast and tell me these things. Never happen.
No, it didn't happen.
No, when I'm not in a room, Gavin lies down and goes to sleep. And that's
he doesn't have a life.
He doesn't have... No.
He's at home waiting for you.
That's what's happening.
But like...
Has to be that way in my brain.
Your partner leaves you for Julia Roberts, you're going to be pissed. Even though she's Susan Sarandon and she's arguably just as good.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, you would be upset.
You would be upset. And like... And also, she's not... Julia Roberts is not rising to the occasion in early parts of the film because that's how films need to work.
And I always wonder how... So I'm always confused as to how long Julia Roberts has been with Luke.
So it's
Isabel has been with Luke.
Isabel has been... I can't believe you memorized his name. Oh my gosh. He's always been Ed Harris to me. Quickly after the scene, we get a lot of exposition because Susan Sarandon and Ed Harris... Luke and...
Jackie.
Luke and Jackie are called in to Anna's school because Anna's been lying and she's been saying like that they're getting remarried and they're moving to Switzerland together, which is very, like, looking back now, it's like, oh God, that's
awful.
That was her dream.
That was the dream.
And so they talk about the nature of the divorce. And it's a very graceful exposition scene of like, they split up. There seems to be some kind of disruption over whether she threw him out versus... whether he left, which
did
I think
leave
is
her for
no. So he says quite clearly, and I think it's very much so we don't hate Julia Roberts in the movie.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That she's not the bad.
He had seen some women just after they split up, and then he met Isabel, and now him and Isabel have been together for a year, and they're living together.
She's been in it for a year. Okay,
yeah. Which still for me seems like
to be taking care of his kids to that extent is a lot. Yeah, I mean. A year is when you're still in the honeymoon period.
Right, like I have a friend who's going out with her boyfriend for 8 months and she's only just met his kid. Like, and that to me seems reasonable, I think. Yeah,
because you have to be careful with who you put in those children's lives. Because if they get attached and then they go, it's like, that is hard for a kid. You have to play it really well.
Totally.
And I think my dad, I think it was a similar thing with my dad where he probably dated women, but we didn't realise until he met someone that he was like interested in, and then we got to know her and met her kids, and you know, like
I just rewatched that episode of Sex and City because I had that thing and I'm on a deadline, and all I can do on a deadline is watch things I've already watched a million times. So it's 100%. Just like
that's all I do anyway.
I thought, and so I watched that episode where Miranda goes out with the guy who has a kid, and the kid is on all their dates.
I know, it's dumb. You need to keep that separate.
And then she's just having her...
And she slams the door on him.
She's having her sex wee and she slams the door
on him. Why is the kid there?
Why is the kid there? And then, like, further...
Where's his mom?
Dead.
Oh, maybe.
But, like, get a babysitter.
Yeah, get a babysitter, for God's sake.
But then, to follow that, like, the kind of the big sort of faux pas that Isabel makes early on is that... Anna catches the two of them in the shower together, which I'm just like, why are you in the shower with your boyfriend when his kids are in the house? That did scandalize me a bit now.
I don't think, for some reason, that never bothered me that much.
I was furious last night.
So now, when I watched it the other day, I was like, oh, okay, like they could have waited.
Yeah.
Like, were they having sex in the shower?
Well, let's face it, no one actually has sex in the shower.
No, it's too hard.
It's too hard.
Too slippy.
But they were definitely doing sexy stuff.
Oh, God. She walked in on her dad getting a hand job.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No, in my head...
No, that gives a horrible undertone to the film that I don't want to think
about.
No,
I don't want to think about it. In my head, it's like sexy, playful, ooh, I'm washing you kind of thing. And like, look at me, I'm naked. And aren't we like starting off our day in a sexy way? I don't think they're actually touching each other's genitals.
No, but also there is a scene where she says to her mum how loud Isabel is.
I know.
So actually...
I was scandalised by that as well.
Maybe they are doing sexy things with the kids and that. Yeah, I mean, that's just wait. You can just wait.
I don't know about you, but if I've ever been in a situation where I am somewhere where there are other people and the mood takes me, if I'm having any kind of sex, I am a mouse.
Oh, so quiet.
Yeah.
It's actually almost more fun to try and be as quiet as you can.
Exactly.
I enjoy that.
I enjoy it. It's a challenge.
It's a secret.
It's always fun.
It's a secret. It's always more fun.
It really is.
Yeah, like if I'm at my boyfriend's...
over some house guests.
If I'm at my boyfriend's parents' house or whatever, it's at his mum's house in Sheffield, it's always more fun. Sorry to Tina if she's
sorry,
listening.
Tina.
Oh, God.
Sorry. Yeah, so, like, I get it.
Yeah. Keep it down,
for God's sake. And then, obviously, simultaneous to all this, we have this growing plot. And poor old Susan Sarandon, she's got that lovely house where she's constantly sewing or horse riding. But
she's like Mother Earth.
She is so good.
She's like the perfect mother.
Yeah.
Figure.
And she's not, well, I really appreciated this time around is that she's not just a, like she's a perfect homemaker or whatever. Because I think a worse script would have made her like, you know, a real uptight bitch or whatever. But she's actually not.
No, she's not.
She loves hanging out with her kids. She loves talking to her kids.
And she has a few comebacks to Isabel, Julia Roberts, where she's, you know, she seems a bit bitter and she's a bit of an asshole.
Yeah.
But you
it's
don't
so
think,
understandable.
But yeah, but you don't ever think of her as an asshole. You just sort of watch it and go, oof. You know what I mean? Like, oof, that was a low blow.
Totally.
But you're never like, she's a bitch. You never think that because you can tell that she loves the kids. She's a nice person. She's a dedicated mother.
And there's this great bit where... like at the beginning of the movie, her and her kids have a lot of fun being like, Isabel's big teeth.
Yes. And I laughed because I've got huge teeth. And I was like,
no, what are you talking about?
I've got Invisalign at the moment. I've not got it in, but I'm trying to straighten my front teeth because they are quite big.
They look perfectly fine for me from where I'm standing.
Oh, really? So yeah. I've always thought of myself as a big tooth woman.
Oh.
So when I was watching it and they said that as like an insult as a joke, my boyfriend like laughed because recently, and this is horrible and I shouldn't read too much into it, but you know, the more followers that I've got online, you do get an occasional horrible comment and you should never read them. I try not to read the comments under videos. Mm. But the two negative comments I've had two and they've both been about my teeth. One of them
said,
sort your teeth out. And one of them said, you can tell she's British by her teeth. And I really wanted to reply to the one saying, sort your teeth out. Like, I am, actually. I have Invisalign. But I know that's, like, besides the point. But it's like, So when she said big teeth, me and my boyfriend laughed because we'd been talking about that recently, about the fact that I have big teeth. So I was like, I didn't realise it was, like, an insult thing.
So I wonder if, like, it made it into the script in a way that, like... maybe Julia Roberts has a hang-up about her teeth kind of thing.
Yeah, maybe.
Because it's that thing of like...
So I can understand it.
Yeah, I wonder if there was something else in that line originally that like maybe... Because I know that the Julia Roberts and Susan Sarandon had a lot of like input into the script.
Yeah, they did. They added bits. I bet that came from her, actually.
Yeah.
She's got a huge smile.
She does, yeah, exactly. And like her smile is famous, but like of course she would internalize that as like big teeth.
Yeah.
You know, that's so funny.
But I'd never look at Julia Roberts and think big teeth.
Yeah.
But maybe that did come
from her.
But
it's that very powerful thing of like women know what other women are going to be insecure about.
They do.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah, she has a lot of fun with her kids slagging off.
Yes.
Isabel.
Oh, they slag her off, yeah, but you don't hate her. You never hate her.
And you also, it's like, yeah, like it sucks for you. Like they're having this great time in their big fancy Soho loft and you're just sewing quilts. Like you've got no boyfriend.
She's always sewing that bloody quilt.
And crucially, you have cancer.
Yeah.
So it's like this thing that only that character knows. It's why it's like always good when you're writing story to have at least one character who has secrets from the other characters, where it's like there's something that, and it's like why the Traitors is such an amazing TV show, because it's like we, the audience, know all the secrets, but we're watching people not know the secrets.
I haven't seen it.
never mind.
I know. I know yeah. what the premise is. And I actually am mad at myself this time around for not watching it. I hate myself for it.
Start with Australia now.
I'm going to watch it.
But anyway, that thing of like, we are just watching her being very cruel to Julia Roberts, who's trying really hard. Mm. And then we know that like, it is not now just that like, oh, this kind of younger inappropriate woman is spending too much time with my kids. It's she is going to be the person who I am forced to pass the mantle to, and who will, like as the movie goes on, who will be parenting my children after my death.
Yeah. So it's the toughest thing for Susan Sarandon, because she not only does she have cancer, but yeah. she's this woman who she doesn't like at first.
Yeah.
Is going to be her children's stepmom in the future. And she's
the titular stepmom.
And you know, and she still doesn't understand why her husband couldn't make it work with her. And there's all of this stuff going on. And like, arguably, the worst thing in the film is for her.
Yeah. Well, arguably, there's no argument. No. It's the worst for her.
I was thinking more like, you could say the kids, because they're losing their mom.
They're losing their mom, yeah.
But the Susan Sarandon storyline is just, it's too much.
But it's so complicated as well, because it's like full, and it's like this thing that like, and everyone's had somebody in their life who is in a position of power who they don't fucking understand. Like where it's like, she blows hot and cold with her all the time. Like sometimes she's quite nice with her, and then suddenly she'll just turn on her. And like, I remember a scene that really annoyed me when I was a kid was the Pearl Jam thing.
Oh my God. That still annoys me.
Yeah.
I get it, but that, come on.
Yeah.
That was out of order. She's trying to, because also, I guess at the time.
So what's the Pearl Jam thing again? Just so people haven't seen it recently.
Julia Roberts is trying to bond with her stepdaughter. Well, they're not married yet, but she's trying to bond with Luke's kids.
Yeah.
And she cannot seem to bond with the 12-year-old girl, understandably.
Yeah.
The 12-year-old girl still wants her parents to be married. And a way to bond with the kid is she buys her two Pearl Jam tickets. Or she asks Susan Sarandon if she minds if she takes her daughter to a Pearl Jam concert midweek, and Susan Sarandon says no, it's midweek. What are you thinking? She's in school.
Yeah.
And she completely
knows
it.
Was Pearl Jam that big among preteens? It's very, very strange.
Well, I couldn't even tell you a Pearl Jam song.
My brother-in-law is obsessed with them, but like he was crucially in his late teens. Do you know what I mean? It's a late teen, you know, band for a man to be into. It's weird that you...
Unless Julia Roberts is really into Pearl Jam and she thinks that Anna will like them.
Maybe. We'll find out, I guess. Maybe I'll listen to one Pearl Jam song ever and find out.
She vetoes it.
But she shut down immediately. Yeah.
And then, of course, later on in the film... Do we know Susan Sarandon's sick but at this point?
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. So I suppose you're not hating her too
much. Yeah. So she decides to take Anna to the Pearl Jam concert, and then she just sort of looks at like, and this is how I know she's related to Jacqueline Bouvier. She of the Bouviers.
Yeah.
That she's like, oh, you know, great idea. It's like that real waspy, cool thing of like, oh yeah, thanks for the idea about Pearl Jam.
Like you can't even argue with her.
Yeah.
She's just completely brushed it under the carpet.
Yeah. Oh, and she does that several times to Julia Roberts, and it's like, you would scream.
And Julia Roberts at this point doesn't know she's
no.
sick. So she's so mad, and she doesn't really understand why she's not letting her bond with her child.
Yeah, yeah. And there's at one point then where the kids are starting to warm to Isabel a bit.
Yes.
And there's some cute scenes where like they're driving in the car and they're listening
she's
to soul music and putting, yeah.
Yeah.
And then when she drops them off, she's like, is that lipstick? And then Judy Roberts is like, oh, you know, just like.
Just messing around in the
messing
car.
Messing around from the car. He's like, oh, you don't really see that. You don't really see that color in the middle of the afternoon and not on a working girl.
She gets some really good lines. Bitchy lines.
Yeah. But also really bitchy, but like if you were a worse actress, you could really play it off as like super camp. But she just says it in this very Republican-y, waspy sort of, well, you know, kind of like you can't really
catch me on it
because it's so dead downbeat and sort of almost under her breath.
Yeah. And Julia Roberts just sort of has to let it wash over her.
Yeah. Ugh. Awful. But then... sort of another thing. Do you find the score in this movie quite strange? Like it's a John Williams score, and he's obviously like a famous composer.
When you say strange, what do you mean?
Like there's like this kind of this string music that's like da da
yeah
da da da, like it's gonna like it's about to be a thriller, like Julia Roberts about to murder Susan Sarandon.
I just think it's really sad. That I think that music's really sad. That doesn't make me feel horror. I think it's like
it made me think horror movie. Oh, but really? Okay.
It just I think it intensifies the scenes more for sure. Like you can feel something's coming, but for me I didn't feel horror movie.
Okay, just me then.
Imagine, I mean, it is kind of a horror movie.
It
Jesus.
Is, yeah. Ugh. But Susan Sarandon is going to all these like chemo appointments and doctor's appointments alone.
But she's hidden. Yeah, she hasn't. So the premise is that she's had cancer a couple of years back.
Yeah.
That she never told anyone about.
Yeah.
Because she thought that they caught it.
Yeah.
And she's obviously gone back for a checkup and they've found it has spread. And the doctor is now telling her, okay, now you probably should tell your family.
Yeah. Oh. And just the fact that she has to go into the appointments alone. She's I wish she was like, don't you have a sister or a friend? Like,
I know.
But she's just this like Statue of Liberty person. Like,
yeah,
she's
like, I can beat it. I'm fine. Yeah. She's got all of her shit together in life.
Yeah.
She's so together. She's the most together mum you've ever seen on screen. She knows what she's doing apart from the divorce that she's been through. She knows what she's doing. And then this idea that she's, you know, going to have to start scrambling around.
Yeah.
It's really stressful.
And she like also, and she also can't like figure out how. Like, oh, she's like, oh, you know, we start chemo on Wednesday or whatever, and it's like, oh, but that's spaghetti and meatballs night. And then the doctor like plays an amazing role. It's like she's just walked in off Grey's Anatomy. That doctor,
yeah.
And she's just like looks
she's
at
perfect.
Her. She looks at her in this kind of like calm the fuck on like kind of way. And
wake up,
and then she's like, okay, yeah, Tuesday's fine. Like, you know,
She doesn't even have to. That doctor doesn't even have to do or say much. But yeah, she nails the like
gravitas,
the scene.
Yeah. Yeah, she's that perfect sort of mix between sort of like empathetic and sympathetic, but like stern and
she's stern and yeah, it's really upsetting. That scene is really upsetting when she says it's spaghetti meatball night.
Yeah.
Because that's what she looks forward to, because her kids are obviously at their dad's part of the week and then they come home and they do that night.
Yeah.
And she's been looking forward to it. Now she has to miss it. And then that particular night that she has to miss it is, that's the first big cry scene, I find.
Yeah, because she's on the phone to Ben. Oh no, we have to take a break to cry.
Yeah, that scene is the first one where I start going,
yeah.
Because Ben's like, he doesn't know anything yet, and you know that, and you know where she is, and she's like pining for her kids that night.
Yeah,
she's actually having this really shit thing happen to her, and they just want to see their mom. They're like, why are we not having spaghetti meatball night?
Yeah.
And the bit that really is upsetting is the you know where we will meet though tonight?
In our dreams.
In our dreams. And that is just, it's a lot.
It's a lot. Because it's like, it's not even sure that she's dying yet. Like at this point, they're still, you know.
No, whatever. We don't.
It's spread to her lymph nodes, but
we don't even know as the viewer. Like,
I mean, the music is telling us.
The music's telling us, but like,
yeah.
Oh, and then the idea that it's like
she's like preparing him for a life of having a relationship with his mother that he can't see
in their dreams.
I know, it's too much.
Because you can. Yeah, you can feel that the idea of like, I don't know if you've ever lost anyone, but like it is really the only place. But you're not aware that you're going to dream of them. But the only place you really still see them, like, you know, I dream my cousin died, and sometimes he appears in my dreams, and it's like, and he's there.
Yeah,
and it's so nice. But then you wake up and you're like, oh my god, he's not there. So the knowing that scene is really hard.
It's weird because we talk about like seeing dead people in our dreams, like it's a common thing, but it is that thing because it is the only place where your brain can trick itself into thinking that person isn't dead. Because the rest of the time when you're thinking of the person that you know that's dead, it's like, oh, I'm thinking of this memory, or I'm thinking about what it would be like if he had lived to X age or whatever. But you're thinking in the kind of cold, sad logic of day, and then you have a dream about someone. And it's so hard when you wake up not to assign so much meaning to that dream. and I'm always like, whenever like someone dead tells me something in a dream, I'm like, I comb through it for like years afterwards, you know?
And sometimes they're in your dream, but they're not even them. It's like, they're there. You know they're there because you can, it's the presence you can feel of that person.
Yeah.
And then you wake up and, and then the idea that this little kid for the rest of his life is just going to be seeing his mum in his dreams is so gut-wrenching. That's the biggest, that scene is just so, maybe when I'm watching the film, because I've seen it before.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why that scene gets to me so badly.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
And
it's
she's
definitely
breaking up as well.
Rewatch.
She's starting to cry, and she's trying to hide it from him on the phone.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh my God.
It's too much. I love this movie.
Yeah, I know. It's just, it's so good, but it's so sad.
Yeah. But then we're like straight into like, and also, it really strikes me on this time around how short the time framing is for this movie, where like it's like Thanksgiving, then it's Halloween, then it's Thanksgiving, then it's Christmas kind of thing. It's like she dies of cancer quickly. Like she's like,
yeah, I never understand that because I'm like,
it's like 2 months basically, 2-3 months.
Yeah, I always think, I mean, obviously we'll get to the end bit later, but I never know if she is actually just gonna like die after Christmas. Or if she actually could just have years, but they're just, they don't know if it's her last Christmas.
I think that is it, yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. That's even sadder now. Yeah, I get the impression that, like, she's got 6 months left from that Christmas scene. That was my vibe.
Yeah.
She looks shagged, like.
But, and also what I just want to touch on is, like, how old is she supposed to be, Susan Sarandon?
50?
So she must have had her kids a little bit older.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Is she fit? Maybe she's, I don't know.
Late 40s, early 50s.
Late 40s, yeah.
But like, and she'd obviously, and they say that they got married right out of college.
Yeah.
Which means that they were together for almost 20 years without kids.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. So let's say she's 48.
Yeah.
Thereabouts. So she has a 12-year-old. So they're making her 36 or something.
Yeah. And then she has Ben at like 41 or something.
That's like, it's very our generation actually, isn't it?
Yeah. That's what the bit I'm always like, oh, they stayed together for a long time.
She's very much on a millennial time frame, is our Susan. Because she was a book editor at Random House. Very millennial. Yeah, she was like making her living in publishing and then just like walked away from it at 36. And
did having kids, was that what split them up? Because she became this, such a mother earth.
Yeah.
That he,
you're right, they got married right out of, so they were together for like a good chunk before they ever had kids.
They both were career people.
Yeah.
As soon as, maybe they were trying for a long time, it never happened, which also helped to push them apart because that's tough on your mental health.
Yeah.
Maybe that once they had kids, she was such a dedicated mother because it had taken her so long to have them.
Yeah.
That she never really had time for him anymore. That's what I think.
Well, this is the one blow up they have that like shows that they were sort of like, this is what it was like towards the end of their marriage, where he kind of screams at her, I was working. She's like, you were never there. I was, that kind of thing of like, clearly he was making like, as we've established, she already has money from being related to Jacqueline Kennedy.
She's and, Kennedy's cousin.
Yeah.
Of course.
Duh. But he was clearly... the man, like, works a lot. Like, he's always away for work already. Like, I honestly don't think that marriage is going to work out with Julia Robertson and Harris because I think he is workaholic.
Well, she's always at home taking care of his kids.
His kids, who aren't even nice to her.
I know.
And so I think, yeah, he wasn't there a lot. They grew apart. She was increasingly obsessed with the kids. They had no... I think it happens a lot to other people. Like, you know, they had no personal life together, I would think.
No.
You know?
It was all about the kids and him just
Which
being
is fine,
here.
I think. I think fine. For lots
they
of couples...
They probably need to make a bit of room for each other.
Yeah. I mean, that's what... like, I remember after... just before and after I got married... Every time I came across like a couple who were a married couple who are older than me, they just like take me by the shoulders and be like, make time for each yeah. other.
Well, like, yeah, I think that's what my mum said was like, once they had me,
yeah,
essentially like all of my dad's like affection
really
went to me and my later on my sister.
Wow.
And it was like, he's this dedicated father and they just don't. And also I think they probably had like, my mum probably got a bit different once she was a mother and she wasn't.
Yeah, of course.
As,
but that's like so normal. Like, yeah, no one should be blamed for any of that.
They made any time for each other, like, yeah. really.
Yeah. Wow. God, you just enunciated my worst fear, I've realised. Because sometimes, like, Gavin's nicer to the dog than he is to me. And I'm like, what? What if you love our kids more than me?
My boyfriend is nicer to the neighbour's cat than he is to me. No, I don't mean... No, he's
no
nice
obviously we don't mean that, but we no, both know what we mean.
But sometimes... Like. So I said to my boyfriend recently, I like, he was just waking up and I was kind of a bit too all over his face.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
oh
just,
my God, love
and,
that.
And he was like...
Me.
And he was getting a bit like, get off. And I was like, if this was the cat, you would be
so
loving
happy.
This. And he's like, what, you're jealous of the neighbor's cat that comes into our house and gets in bed with us? And I was like, no, I'm not jealous of the cat. But I'm like, what's the difference between the cat snuggling you in the morning and me?
God, this is literally a scene from A Marriage, like, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're psycho. No, he's not. But like, he's, it is funny.
Think,
we laugh
I
about
think
it.
It's so fair.
We laugh about it.
It is funny, but also we do have a point, I think.
What's the, why can't you stroke my head in the morning? But you're stroking the dog or the cat, but you went.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, there's something in that.
There's something in that. I feel like my next pet. Though I'll never have an expat because Sylv is my soulmate.
You couldn't replace her.
I couldn't. I don't think I could replace her. But there's something about like having a girl pet as well. That it's like, he's like, he's the most beautiful girl in the world. And I'm like, I'm the most beautiful girl in the world.
I'm the most beautiful girl in the world. But you think if you had a boy dog, do you think he would be more like macho with the boy dog?
Maybe
like,
he would.
Fist bumping him.
Maybe
and, like...
Maybe if there was like a dog penis
be, like,
in the
smooch.
House, he would be less extra with it.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, that's
maybe that's what where they grew apart because they got a female dog, and Ed Harris gave more attention to the dog.
Speaking of the dog, that fucking puppy, it just appears and disappears.
Yeah,
what happens to that dog?
I don't know, but that is a cute puppy.
That is a cute puppy, but like it's very 90s to have a puppy like that. Like you don't get puppies like that anymore. They're all cockapoos or they're all pugs or French bulldogs.
It was golden retrievers in the 90s.
Exactly. And it's all about Andrex puppies.
Oh, my life obsession is to get a golden retriever puppy.
Oh.
I think it's because of the
90s. In London you can't.
No, you can't. But no. Watching those films in the 90s.
Totally. And
maybe
the Andrex ads.
With golden retrievers.
Yeah. Or was I a Labrador? I don't know. But
Homeward Bound.
Oh, fuck me. That's a crier. Jesus.
Shadow
in the pit.
Yeah.
All right, where were we? All right, so then we go to Thanksgiving pageant and it's nice because it's like one of these moments of warmth between the two of them.
So Julia Roberts and Susan Sarandon have started to
bond
ever so slightly.
Yeah.
Because
Anna has started going out with a boy in school who then dumps her because she was frigid.
Yes.
And didn't kiss him.
Classic.
And classic. But it's like, there's this great... Julia Roberts is so all of us in that moment. She's so somebody who listens to podcasts where she's like, they're getting the kids ready backstage. And she's like, oh my God, you know, they're in this relationship, but it's not a relationship. They're just sort of like mimicking this adult drama and dumping each other, which is of course why they got together in the first place, so they could dump each other.
So they could have the big drama,
yeah.
Which made me think about school and go, yeah, that's obviously what we were doing.
That's what
we were copying what we saw.
Totally. But it's like, it's
there was
so...
no romance or even you...
No.
So you'd go out with boys you didn't even like.
You just
you
wanted
didn't even
to break
to
up
them.
With people so you could like just create drama because school's very boring.
I went out with a guy for one day.
Yeah, of course you did.
We didn't speak. Mm. We did kiss at lunchtime and everybody stood in a circle around us while we kissed. And then we didn't speak. And then at the end of the day, we just had like a really amicable breakup.
Shook hands like, and remained friends.
Yeah, we were just like, oh, it's not really working out. And it's like, what?
I know. I remember having one of those. Well, I went to an all-girls school, so we didn't have like these playground things. But there were boys on my road who I knew or whatever, who we were having marriages with. And I remember saying to somebody, like my girlfriend at like, say, age 8, saying, I just don't see it for us long term.
You didn't see yourself getting married and having kids and getting divorced and
8.
Oh my God, 8.
So, but you're just like, the thing
you're
is,
so aware though, but if you're...
Because you're watching Friends all the time, yeah, and like all
it's
that.
It's TV.
Yeah, yeah. And it's all just about, yeah, relationships all the time.
And
it's all your fed.
And also, you're watching, at that age, we were watching very 90s films,
yeah,
about older girls getting into trouble and their, yeah, dramas. So I remember instead of playing mums and dads, we would play like big sisters.
Really?
And yeah, so we would play like a game where we were all cool older girls.
Oh.
But each one of us, this is mad, but each one of us would have like something wrong with us. Like,
yeah,
one of us would be a drug addict. And we were like 10. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
Be like, one of us would have like an eating disorder, or one of us would be a... Because we were watching EastEnders and Girl Interrupted and just films like that,
yeah,
where somebody had like problems, but we still saw them as the cool older girls. So we,
yeah,
just wanted to be like that.
Well, this is the thing. This is the interesting thing about like covering so many like late 90s to early noughties rom-coms on this show with people who are like my own age or whatever. Because all of us were so young watching these movies that like...
It penetrated us early.
Yeah, because I think particularly girls, they're always like fantasizing about what their like Carrie Bradshaw life is going to be. Like,
we're always fantasizing about being older until, yeah, you're our age now, where we're fantasizing about being a couple of years younger.
Yeah. No, not really.
No? All right, just me.
I don't ever think about that. I don't.
But yeah, no, you're always looking to the future.
Yeah, but also like, what was Barbie but the original Carrie Bradshaw?
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
God.
Just like this,
you're
cool...
You're so good, Caroline.
This that cool girl who lives alone in a flat with her outfits. Like,
that's why you're doing this. That's why you do well. That is, I know.
Oh my God, I've never actually had that thought before, but there it is.
Barbie was the original Carrie Bradshaw.
Yeah.
Oh my God, with the outfits and everything.
Yeah, and always living alone.
Typing on a computer.
Yeah.
Oh,
Mary, did you have that Barbie house where like it was like a carry case that folded out and it was like, here's her bedroom, here's the kitchen, here's the living room. It was like the Carrie Bradshaw setup. Like,
no, because my mum wouldn't let me, for years she wouldn't let me have a Barbie.
Oh, bummer.
Until I'd like begged, and then she got me a brunette Barbie for Christmas. And I was like,
babe, the horse is bolted. Do you know what I mean? Like, just give her a standard Barbie.
I think
she
had a tattoo and she was like dark haired.
Yeah.
And I remember, I still loved her, but she just, she obviously didn't want me to be like, I need to be, because I was brunette as well.
Yeah.
By the time I dye my hair blonde now. Probably because my mum never called me a Barbie. I'm trying to be Barbie. But yeah, no. So I never had the house. No.
Yeah. Well.
I'm gutted I missed out on all that.
It's great.
I wanted the Barbie car.
Maybe this is why we do. Maybe this is the real secret behind Sex and the City. Is that we all just want to keep on playing Barbies forever.
Yes.
And that's just watching Carrie Bradshaw live her life.
Yeah, she's Barbie.
Yeah, and in the same when I played Barbies, it was all just like boyfriends and like cheating on people. And like,
yeah, my Barbie used to hook up with my teddy, which is very weird because he is
Beastial.
A bear. He's a bear, but I didn't have a Ken. So my Barbies would hook up with my teddy bears.
I was quite fortunate. Sorry, this is a podcast about stepmom, but I was quite fortunate in that because of my brother, he had an action man that he never played with, but I also had shaving Ken, and so they would, it would always be a love triangle, like two boy dolls.
And we're obsessed with like the relationships. Women are obsessed with relationships.
We're obsessed.
Yeah,
it's so pathetic. I know. And then literally, like, I'm in bed and like Gavin's telling me about like these new sort of things that are happening in like, you know, space travel. And I'm like, you're like, you couldn't give a fuck, could you? I'm like, could not give a fuck.
I don't care. I just want to talk about relationships.
I know.
And that's it.
Yeah, like if the astronauts have beef, like,
yeah. Is the astronaut having an affair? with his secretary.
Does he have an interesting girlfriend I can invest in, maybe? Yeah.
Is she on Instagram?
Yeah.
Can I look her up? Yeah, girls are mad.
We're mad.
So different.
We are, like. So we have the Thanksgiving pageant with the boyfriend drama, which Susan Sarandon gives Anna some advice on. It's all very like, rise above him and like, ignore him.
Which is very like, I think,
wise.
The best advice.
Yeah.
You just rise above it. You don't listen to boys being horrible to you at school.
But it's also that thing of like, and I remember this from childhood of like, when your mother gives you a thing to say, that it's like something quite, I don't know, awkward and too old for what you're saying. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like...
Yeah, and it's like...
Tell him that you're too much of a woman to even regard. It's like, you know, it's like...
Because she's a wise old woman.
She's not old.
Not old, but I mean, like, in the sense of, like, she's... Okay, she's a wise... I shouldn't have put that old in, but she's... Yeah. She's a wise woman.
Yeah.
And that is good advice, but not for a cool 12-year-old that's trying to be cool.
Exactly. And she's like also seduced by the idea of like her daughter acting like a proper young woman in the world. And she wants her to have the right things to say. Whereas like Julie Roberts, you know, who is younger and also works with young people, is like, no, she needs to like say some like cool swears.
So that she becomes cool in school.
Yeah.
And then everyone wants to be her
Listen
friend.
Listen up,
then,
limp dick.
Yeah. Listen up. And the guy she gets.
I know.
So Julia Roberts tells Anna to say some horrific thing to a very young boy at school, which is like, listen up, limp dick.
Why would I mess around with some boy who doesn't even know what snow blowing is?
Yeah, but also, limp dick, I mean, come on, Julia.
He's
you can't be
12.
Saying that to kids. Of course he's got a limp dick.
He's 12.
He's 12. Do you know what I mean? If he had anything other than a limp dick, that's at school. That's upsetting.
But
the snow, and then he doesn't even know what snow blowing is. Oh, and then she turns around and she does a hair flick and goes, my boyfriend's in high school. And
whenever we talk about you, we laugh our asses off.
And then Julia Roberts hires
a male model
to come to the school and wait for the younger girl.
Yeah.
And he has like long hair and a ponytail.
He's like so 90s everything.
Chiseled 90s young boy. But also like, I mean, she could lose her job. Like, sorry, what did you hire him to do?
I'm sorry. What? You reached out to the agency we work with in order to get their Ralph Lauren.
Because he's quite young too.
Yeah, he's like 16.
Yeah, she paid a 16-year-old boy to go and
to an 11-year-old school or 12 or whatever old she is.
Yeah, and then she goes over and they like hug.
Oh, and then he gives her a kiss on the cheek.
He gives her a kiss on the cheek, which is really sweet.
And then she just leaves him and goes straight to her stepmother's car, which you think the kids at school would be like, what?
And at this point, Julia Roberts is standing on the sidelines watching this whole thing unfold, like cheering her on.
Yeah.
And Jackie, the mom, pulls up at the school and watches and is going, what is going on here?
Yeah.
And because,
which is so fair.
Yeah. And because it's gone really well for Anna, Anna's so excited that she's managed to pull this off that she runs to her stepmom.
Yeah.
And it's the first time you actually see them bond and see them like, one. It's not the first time you see them bond, but it's the first time you see them like hug and be really like close. Yeah. And all the while, Jackie, who has cancer and is, you know, still unsure of this woman, is watching her daughter run into her arms. And that is just...
Yeah, after like... And it's like, you so... She, the thing is, from Julia Roberts' perspective, it's like she doesn't know that Jackie has cancer. So she's like, you're being such a cunt to me right now.
Yeah, I just like... do you not want us to... She's thinking, why don't you want me to bond with your daughter when you know how hard it's been? And also, for a while, I think the premise was you kind of thought that Susan Sarandon would want her kids to be happy in their other life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And but it becomes so overshadowed by this thing of like, they're going to forget me and they're going to be brought up by this woman who, like, let's face it, is like, that's done a pretty fucking dubious. Like, it's cool as hell if you're 12, but like, it's very like, she taught her a bunch of swear words.
Yeah, it's not on.
An incredibly perverted sex act for like, just way above the like pay grade of a child.
She's having sex in the
house. Hired a male model.
Like, she's having loud sex in the house with her kids there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you would be.
You'd be freaked.
You'd be
like,
furious.
You'd be like, I could have 6 months left to live, and like, this is the woman who's going to be their mother.
Yeah.
No, what? She, like, she,
yeah, it's no
she
wonder.
Buy a gun.
I know. Get her on that farm.
Get her on that farm where there's no one around but the horses to hear you. Yeah, and so she freaked at her. And then Judy Roberts is like, I just did something cool. Lay off. Like, so it's like one of those brilliant drama scenes where everybody's right and everybody's wrong, you know? And then eventually this all kind of comes to a head and they go for a drink. I love when characters go for a drink in this movie. It happens like three times. It's so good.
It's the same bar.
It's the same little bar. Yeah.
And it must be the bar that's near Jackie's house.
Must be.
Because
yeah.
in New York, you've got so many bars to choose from. Yeah, Why would you always go to the same one?
Yeah. So it's in like Connecticut or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's clearly like, yeah, that's the bar they go to.
That's
yeah.
the bar in the little like town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very Stars Hollow.
It's very Stars Hollow. Yeah. Oh my God. Oh,
I love that I said that.
Yeah. It's classic Caroline. It is very Stars Hollow. It's like,
my God, Emily Gilmore and Jackie are best friends.
Yes. Yeah.
D.A.R.
Apart from Jackie's probably older. But like when Jackie's younger, she's Susan Sarandon's age.
Yeah.
And they're best friends.
They're best friends.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. Well, they certainly know each other.
Emily Gilmore would so come to her chemo appointments.
Yes. Although Emily Gilmore, she doesn't tend
she's
to have
a loyal
close
friend.
Friends.
If you, that's the thing. See, women of that kind, they don't confide in their friends because they're so afraid of appearances and judgment.
No,
and that's why so many of them.
Husbands.
I know, their husbands
suck.
Jackie doesn't
have a husband.
Oh, no.
Jackie's on her own with no friends.
So sad. So
they go for a drink.
Yeah.
Oh,
She tells her about the cancer. Oh, no, first. Sorry.
No.
First.
So, Julia Roberts. Jackie's
goes
asked,
sleuthing.
Jackie's asked Julia Roberts to like look after the kids for a few days or something, or asked if she can take the kids because she's going somewhere.
Yeah.
She's going to away for a few days.
LA.
And she's also told Julia Roberts she's thinking of start going back to Random House.
Yes.
Oh, and she asked
to cover
Julia Roberts,
to cover for her various appointments. Yeah.
And she asked Julia Roberts to pick the kids up from a birthday party.
Yeah.
And she does it
so good, yeah.
And because she's having such a bad time with chemo, that's why she's in the house. She's like throwing up all the time. She's like, I can't go and pick my kid up from this birthday party. I'll ask Julia Roberts to go. So she asks Julia Roberts, and then when Julia Roberts gets back,
she loses the address.
Yeah, she
and because it's the '90s and no one has cell phones, she calls Random House and is like, oh, Jackie's having a meeting. Can you just tell her this is what's happening?
And they're like, Jackie is not here.
Jackie's been
like,
dead for 20 years.
She's been dead for 10 years. No, she's like, they're like, no, she hasn't. We haven't seen her since she left here, basically. And Julia Roberts is like,
12
why
years
did she
ago.
Really specifically tell me that she was going back to Random House? This is like nuts.
Yeah.
So she's already suspicious.
Yeah.
And she picks Ben up. She manages to find the address. She drops them off, and then Susan Sarandon goes in the house with the kids, leaving Julia Roberts outside, standing above some of Jackie's paperwork. So she snoops through it, and sees some plane tickets to LA and a letter from somebody at Random House, LA.
Yeah,
and she jumps
saying
to the conclusion,
like, so, "Don't worry, it'll all be fine. Excited to see you," something like that. Yeah,
and she jumps to the conclusion that Jackie is going back to Random House, but she's going back to Random House in LA.
Very
and,
fair conclusion to jump to,
and
I
taking
think.
The kids.
Yeah.
Which makes her freak out because, I mean,
because she loves her husband to be, and
he'll
be destroyed, and she's getting to be quite fond of these kids.
Yeah, so she's, you know, she's already like jacking in her job basically for these kids.
Yeah,
like she likes.
She
them.
Got fired.
Yeah. And when Jackie comes out of the house, Julia Roberts, says to her, you know, what she's found, and she's like, please don't take the kids away from Luke, he'll be devastated. And she's like crying, and she's really upset about this, and Jackie's leading her to believe that that is what she's doing, like, why would you care, you know, isn't this what you've always wanted? And then that's when the revelation happens, that after Julia Roberts finishes like her big spiel about please don't take these kids away from my husband to be,
it's such good crying
him. Such good crying. Jackie sparks up a joint.
So good.
She sparks up a spliff and she says, actually,
you guessed the wrong secret.
I am going to LA, but it's where my oncologist is.
Yeah.
And she says something like, you know, what's the line? Something about smoking weed.
It's like, pot is legal now, but you have to have,
cancer
first.
Good thing is, pot's legal now, but you have to have cancer first. And she's like, and Julia Roberts takes a moment and she's like, are you dying?
Yeah. Not today.
Like, not today. And that's how they, that's how Julia Roberts finds out.
And now we're getting into like the bottom quarter of the movie where things get rough.
Rough. Like, it's actually, it's one thing after another. It's one cry scene after another. It's actually relentless.
It's relentless. Like, so there's the like, there's the bit of like Jackie desperately trying to make like cinematic memories with her children that they'll remember forever.
So that's the bit that really, I've got shivers thinking
it's
about
it. It's the horses at night in the snow.
So the bit that really got, oh my God, I'm going to cry.
It's relentless.
The bit that got my boyfriend really crying was because he saw so much of his mum in that scene where he was like,
yeah,
she's very like, fly by the seat of her pants, would like, you know, wants them to have all these crazy big memories and wants them, and she sees it snowing outside. Oh my God. And she's like, oh, this would be so nice to take my daughter out for like a solo horse ride in the snow. And she's doing that though because she knows that
this is the last chance that she probably have to do it.
I can't. It's so sad. And they go for this this horse ride in the snow, and you're, as a viewer, sobbing, and you're thinking this is such a special memory, but it's so tainted because it's so like, how can you enjoy the like?
And also like, and also that she hasn't told Anna yet either. That's coming soon. So she, Anna just thinks she's having a special moment with her mom. She doesn't.
Oh yeah, that's she doesn't know. You know, as a viewer, Anna doesn't know, and she just thinks it's this really cool thing she's doing. And Jackie holds a like brave face through the whole thing, and she's just enjoying it for what it is. So she's like, and then I think something happens, and then they go for this drink. Her and Julia. Yeah. What's the reason that they trying to remember?
I don't know. So the thing is, we've been talking about this movie in such detail, but we've actually missed loads. Like, there's like, there was a bit where she was gonna never allow Julia Roberts with her ever again.
She loses that. That comes like partway through.
She loses Ben.
Oh, that's it. She loses Ben, and Julia Roberts threatens to, you know, get custody of the children.
Oh, Susan Sarandon.
Susan Sarandon wants custody of the children. She can't believe that Julia Roberts lost Ben. Da da da. And then. So that happens, and then obviously that doesn't go ahead.
Yeah.
But finally...
Finally they offer the drink, which has come after the joined scene, yes. And then she opens the drink with being like, I once lost Ben.
Yeah, so she tells the kid's stepmom.
That she's like, she's not perfect.
She's not perfect, and she's wanting to bond with this woman now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because she's realised that she's probably not going to live through this, and she doesn't want... to end on a bad
note. Yeah.
So she sits down and says to Julia Roberts, I lost Ben once in the supermarket. And she's like, he never told me that. And she's like, he only remembers that I found him.
Yeah.
And Julia Roberts is like, why did you never tell me? She's like, you know why.
Yeah.
Because she, at the time, she just didn't, she wanted to be the perfect mother, and she didn't, she hated her.
Yeah.
At the time. And, oh my God, this...
The worst bit.
In the whole movie.
Yeah. So I think this is what Julia Roberts should have gotten her Oscar for, as much as I adore Erin Brockovich.
Yeah.
And I do adore Erin Brockovich, where she says, you know, you're perfect, and, like, think down the line. No, I can't get through it. Think down the line to her wedding, and I'm alone in a room with her. Telling her that no woman has ever looked more beautiful, and I'm fluffing her gown. And my worst fear is all she's thinking is, I wish my mom was here.
And then Susan Sarandon says, and my fear is that she won't. Oh my God, it's so sad.
It's so, why is it so terrible?
And like, and you can feel so much for both these women that have this like... Susan Sarandon's worried that her kid's going to forget her.
Yeah.
And Julia Roberts is worried that she's never going to live up to this perfect woman.
They're both in these like impossible situations, like, and it's like they just have to, and there's like no option but to just accept it. Like, there's like nothing you can do. Like, it's so awful. Mom.
It's so awful.
Yeah.
It's the worst thing ever.
It's the worst thing ever.
Like, I've watched, I'm a crier and I cry at movies. And I actually, the thing is with this movie is everyone can relate.
Yeah.
There's no, it's not just a sad thing in a film where you're like, oh yeah, that's sad. You're like, you can relate to it so hard.
Yeah, totally. Like whenever I'm with my mom, there always comes a moment where I realize that like, oh, like this woman like grew me using only sex and food like inside her. And now she just has to deal with me like in a different country, making mistakes and like doing stuff. And sometimes like not remembering to call her for 2 weeks or what, you know what I mean? Like just like being a fucking dick, you know? And like, how do you psychically deal with that? That must be so terrible. And then you watch this movie and the full weight of like everything mothers experience, regardless of whether or not they're dying or whatever. It's like that they, you know, we're all going to shuffle off the mortal coil eventually. We all have to live with the fact that these people go on without us. And how that hits for mothers is just like this different realm. Like, you know.
You're like, you don't want to miss out on anything.
Yeah.
And the fact that the reason this was so hard is like because the kids are so young.
Yeah.
And like she's the scene where she's like, she's in the house. Oh my God. She's in the house and she like, she's tucking her kids in and then she just stops at one point and she like it's like she realizes.
Yeah.
And she's looking at them both and she's like freaking out.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's watching them sleep and she's freaking out. She's like, fuck, I'm not going to be there. I don't, like, are they going to be okay? It's so sad.
It's so sad.
And I'm like, and that scene, that's when that like music, that da da da.
Yeah.
And she's like staring at her kids and she's like, oh my God, it's. Yeah, it's relentless. It's relentless. And then the scene as well when, so she's told everyone by this point.
Yeah.
And she goes off to have her chemo. Uh-huh. Well, she goes off to LA and she comes back.
Was that when the meatball scene happens and the dreaming thing is when she's in LA? I can't remember.
No, that's early on when she starts the chemo. But then she goes to LA, I think, for some like treatment that may help her.
And then it doesn't work, yeah.
But she comes back and she's like in a wheelchair and then like Isabel goes to pick her up from the airport with the kids. Like, where's the dad? Come on.
Where's the fucking dad? The thing is, if he was in it more, it would make film worse because it's about these two women.
It's about their relationship and their bonding. And then, so they go and Ben sort of turns to the stepmom now and he's asking her questions.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, why is she in a wheelchair or like or something like that, and Julia Roberts is having to be the strong one that's like, you know, don't mention it, basically, like, she's fine, she's just feeling a bit
tired
today, she's tired. And then you come up to Christmas and the scene where the dad picks up a Christmas tree and takes it round for her.
Yeah.
Because he's thinking she probably hasn't got one yet. Like, who's going to go and do this for her? She probably can't do it herself because she's getting weaker or whatever. And then he turns to her and he's like crying and he's like, what the fuck am I going to do without you? And that always really gets me as well because I'm like, it shows that he still loves and cares about her.
I know.
Her.
And there's like a scene where in early on in the movie where she snaps at him and she's like, oh, how convenient that we're a we every time you want me to do something I don't want to do, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like something
that.
And then towards the end of the movie, he's like, when they're talking about breaking it to the kids, they're like, this is something we're doing.
We're doing. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. And that, just having been there when my, you know, those conversations when I was young of my parents sitting me down, you know. Yeah. To tell me some horrible news or something together was, you can really feel that in that scene where they tell the children.
Yeah. And the kids are like, are you guys breaking up again? Kind of thing. And it's like, these are already kids who've been traumatized by this marriage and this divorce.
First of all, they got told that
they're getting their feet back on planet Earth and now they're getting knocked off again. It's so unfair.
And the reaction that the daughter always had really bothered me.
Yeah. But now it makes,
perfect sense. But she sort of, she gets told her mum's sick and her immediate reaction is to get up and say, well, mum's dying, Isabel's your mother
new mom
now.
Yeah.
And I used to think, fuck, that's so awful. Yeah. And the look on Susan Sarandon's face, she does that. Susan Sarandon does this role perfectly.
Yeah. She's so good.
She's so good. And but now watching it, I'm like, yeah, of course you feel that way. You're angry. The kid was angry. Yeah.
How dare, like, life throw another thing at her? It's
her
so unfair.
Divorced. She then got told that her dad was remarrying and yeah. her dream
she
of her parents
She had to see Julia Roberts in the shower, which is going to affect her self-image for the rest of her life.
And then she gets told she's losing, like, not only her mother, but, like, Mother Earth mother.
Yeah.
Like,
the mother.
The person that is it, the strongest person in her life.
Yeah.
That will always
the most
be
consistent
there for her.
Person. Yeah. yeah.
And there's a scene where the dad is sort of says to Susan Sarandon, like, it should have been me.
Oh, my God.
And then there's yeah. a small part of you that goes,
yeah. like, actually, we'd get over that.
Like, she can't, you're like, you basically, yeah. you can't lose this woman.
Yeah, she is like the meeting point where all information and love comes together. Do you know what I mean? Like, she's the Venn diagram of everything. Like, how are they going to survive? Like, and he's like, I am not equipped to, like, no. do this.
And him and Julia Roberts, that both of them feel like they are not equipped.
Yeah.
That woman is everything to those children.
Yeah.
Everything. She's their support. She's their, like...
But even, she's the, like, the only reason that Julia Roberts and Ed Harris are able to have the beautiful relationship they do is because of that woman. Because yeah. of the load she carries with those children, you know? And no wonder she's fucking resentful of that.
Yeah.
And then, like... And it's so correct because, like, she has, like, a little exchange with Ben. But then, like, because Ben's only seven. Like,
he's
so,
seven.
So, like, he kind of is able to just, like, okay, or whatever. He kind of just ingests it.
He's really taking it in his stride.
Yeah, because he doesn't know what any of it means, really. And then they just start dancing.
Oh, it's, oh my God, that scene. Even though it's, like, a happy scene, it's unbearable. So, so Susan Sarandon and Ben... Jackie yeah. and Ben are dancing to
Ain't No,
Ain't
Man
no
High.
Mountain High No. And yeah. and the young girl who has just found out that her mum is sick, who has stormed off and said some really, yeah. really horrible things, she hears this song and she goes into the bedroom and she can't believe that they're just having fun because
yeah.
I've just found out this horrific news that you've got cancer. Like, how can you be dancing around and having fun?
Yeah.
And she says something like, this is Isabel's song.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know this song. This is Isabel's song. And then the mum's like, listen.
Isabel knows the words, but I got the moves.
And then they put the song on again and they start dancing and singing to their hairbrushes. And they have this, like, glorious night where, like, they're, like, seeing their mum, witnessing their mum sort of, like, just yeah. be a bit more loose than normal.
Yeah.
And dance. And, like, they have this really, really enjoyable memory with their mum.
Yeah. Because that's all that matters. She's gone through the, like... The sort of seven stages of grief, really, kind of thing.
She's like,
already, she's like, all I can do is make the best of what I have left. Like, it's.
Yeah. And then you find, but still at this point, like.
I hope when I'm dying, I handle it as well as Susan Sarandon does in this movie.
Oh, I just know that I wouldn't act like that.
No, I know.
I would be a brat.
I think that would be okay.
I would just be so miserable and sad.
I know, but then you'd move through that and then you get into your Ain't No Mountain High Enough thing.
I hope so.
Listen, we all have to die eventually, so we might as well go out like Susan Sarandon.
She really just, yeah, she takes it in her stride. And then I think we find out then that the doctor's like, you could try.
Yeah.
This hasn't worked, but yeah. you could try some other things.
Mm-hmm.
And Susan Sarandon says, no, I just want to spend my time at home.
Yeah.
In my head, when I watch that bit, I'm like, no, try the other things. Please
I know,
try the
I'm
other
like,
things.
Try the
it
other
really,
thing.
Like, bothers me.
Yeah.
But then Matt was saying, when we watched it together the other night, my boyfriend, he said, yeah, but if you... We don't know the ins and the outs. There's probably yeah. a small chance, and she probably knows that.
Yeah.
And it's probably spread to the point of, like...
Yeah.
And you don't want to spend your last days writhing in pain.
Mm.
When you could be spending them at home
yeah.
with your children.
Even if you get like...
Because you have to travel. You'd totally. Have to go to like Europe for them.
Yeah, I'm also conscious that people who are listening will have had cancer like affect their lives. And they've probably had a bunch of people choose a bunch of different routes from like the no
yeah.
more treatment to the like any treatment possible thing. But it is such like a... It's so...
It's a personal decision.
It's such a personal decision. Like, and there's no right or wrong thing.
No, there's no right or wrong thing. And you presume if you were in that position that you would be like, no, I'll try everything. But actually... Yeah. the reality is traveling's hard on the body anyway. Yeah. And if you're constantly traveling back and forth, you just want to spend,
you know,
you might have longer than you thought. You want to just spend that time with the people that you love.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we get to Christmas Day and they all have Christmas Day together in the big house. And like...
The white dove.
Isabel and Luke are downstairs and they do this kind of thing where they're like, everyone's so respectful that like she needs as much private time with these children as she possibly can.
She needs to almost have a tiny little private Christmas as well.
Yeah. And like they go upstairs individually and she makes them these beautiful quilts of all the photographs.
Oh my God, that quilt. It makes me cry just thinking about it. It's like...
Yeah.
And you're looking at these photos and you're like, oh, she's going to have this quilt forever.
Forever.
It's got pictures of her and her mom on it. And it's really sad. And... So she has these like really beautiful moments with her two kids, which is probably, I think, what they're getting at. It's like, it's her last Christmas.
Yeah.
And there's something really devastating about Christmas anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Christmas is such a sad time of year for people that have lost someone or a parent. Or,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and Christmas, because you're meant to feel so joyful at Christmas. And if you don't, you almost feel like more
shit. It's just like, exactly, because like everything's being pushed on you for like a month beforehand. It's like, you're coming out for a drink.
You've got to enjoy it.
You must enjoy it.
It's Christmas. And you're like, but what if I'm in a fucking shit headspace?
Yeah. What if my mom is dead?
What
and
if my mom's dying?
Yeah.
And I'm having to like be like, just having these last Christmas conversations. Like, that's really fucking sad. How can anyone enjoy that? And they're trying to make it special. And I know. And the thing that always gets me is like, I know that my mum would do that too.
Yeah. All our mums would do it.
She'd be like really putting on a brave face and like, you know, trying to say all the right things. Like, I'll always be in your heart and stuff. It's so like, ugh. And you think every mum would do that.
Yeah.
Every mum would do that. And so she has these like special moments with her kids.
Especially as well that like, I know we're going on so long, but like,
I know. It's an epic film.
It's an epic film, and this podcast will be of epic proportions. But it's like, Christmas is such a time where women's labor is so central to it.
Yeah.
And like, it's almost like, I heard someone describe it once as like, Christmas is a time where like, women who already do too much do twice as much as that, and it's our jobs to just like both ease it and praise it kind of thing. And it's so much of like, I don't know about your house, but Christmas Day is like, and look at mom and look what she did and this, and obviously we all help, but like everyone for years,
but it's Christmas revolves around
mothers.
It just does.
Mothers make Christmas happen, or traditionally they do anyway. Obviously everyone has different family
situations, but my family again it's centered around obviously I'm from a divorced family, but my mum, my Christmas with my mum it's very traditional how her and her sisters had their Christmas
when
they were young. And it's very specific to my mum's traditions. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we're just along for the ride and it's my mum. She does the cooking.
And you're enlisted to peel things and scrub things, but like she is the...
And the way she decorates
the captain
her tree
of that ship. Yeah.
And everything.
And so for a woman who already does too much, and like the Susan Sarandon, the Jackie character, like for her to not be in the kitchen or not be wrapping presents or not be like bustling around doing a million things like at Christmas, it's like, that's like, I know it's not pointed out, but it's what I just thought about the whole time.
Yeah, like, I was listening, upstairs in bed basically.
Upstairs in bed, like that would have been so alien for a woman like that to be doing that at Christmas. Like, this is unrelated, but I was listening to an interview with Nancy Myers recently and she was talking about how The Holiday failed in the cinemas, and she said, it's like, yeah, because my audience are busy at Christmas.
Yes.
Wow, what a way to know your audience.
Yes,
you know?
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. So then we have Christmas downstairs.
So she goes downstairs and they do the unveiling of the white dove, which I think has the symbolism of like peace.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
It's like...
Oh, of course, it's a peace symbol.
The white dove is a peace symbol.
Very good, Lou. You told me that you wouldn't be good at this, but you are.
To be fair, it was a conversation. I feel bad taking complete credit for it because... I had that conversation with Matt when we were watching it.
Yeah, I feel like you could only have a conversation with somebody who'd seen it for the first time.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, the White Dove's piece. And I was like, oh, yeah. And then then we were talking about it and I was like, he thought maybe that was a bit on the nose. But I was like,
but I've been watching this movie for my whole life.
I mean, I never even realised. But he did want to be a magician when he was young, so maybe.
Yeah.
But the White Dove, so it's like the peace symbol of that, of like, yeah. They have made peace with the fact that she's dying, and the two women, the two central characters, have made peace with each other, and they are happy for each other to be in their daughter's lives.
Yeah. And then the last scene in the movie is like Isabel taking the family photo.
Which is, so she sets up the camera.
Yeah.
She's taking the picture of the kids with both their parents, joint Christmas, last joint Christmas.
Yeah.
And then at the end,
Susan Sarandon says, now let's get one with the whole family.
Oh.
And then Julia Roberts comes and sits next to her. And it's
she sits next to her. She sits and she looks, the look on her face when she says the whole family is like this look on Julia Roberts' face of like, I've been accepted and, you know, I should be here. This is my family now. And she like looks really happy and she sits next to her.
Yeah, and it's like so perfect because it's that thing of like these characters are not people who are ever physically close together.
No.
Like they're always across the tables or across rooms talking at each other. So she's kind of very gingerly sitting next to her because she's a sick person and she's someone who's been her enemy for like most of the time. She's
been horrible to her. But
I know. And then this like this awkward little moment where like Jackie puts her arm on her shoulder, her hand on her shoulder. But it's so perfect.
It's like, perfect.
It's such incredible body language acting.
It is. Like, the subtlety of it is so good. And she puts her arm on, and then Julia Roberts very sort of slowly puts her hand up and puts her hand on Susan Sarandon's hand.
Yeah.
And it's this tiny moment that no one else in the room will really know about.
And even in the photograph will barely come out.
No, but it's this very intense moment between the two women where you go, they're okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's going to be okay. Like, it's going to be horrible.
It's going to be horrible. But Susan Sarandon has, Jackie has made peace with the fact that this is the woman that is going to be in her kids' lives. And she's showing her that by putting her arm around her.
And that's it, Mom.
Honestly, rewatching it again this time, I was like, I was nervous to watch it because I cry so much. Like, you know, watching it, that you're just going to have a terrible, terrible... Yeah. It's not terrible in a bad way, but it's like, you're just going to cry a lot.
Yeah.
And you're going to think about your own mom.
But it's also just like, yes, the last quarter is an onslaught and it is really difficult.
Relentless, yeah.
But it, not in the way that the last 25 minutes of Titanic feels like relentless. It's like, it feels just so earned and comfortable in a way kind of thing, and like it's actually a very cozy and pleasurable movie to watch.
It is,
for most of it, like,
and a lot of it is quite funny. There are some funny moments.
It's great lines
really, like
visual, as you say. Yeah,
it's a lovely watch, like on the eyes. Yes. Very Gilmore Girls.
Very, because it's always fall. Yeah, it's I'm gonna say like October to December is the whole run of the movie,
you know. And it's like an autumn. It's an autumn film.
Yeah, and there aren't that many autumn films.
No, you know? I never realized it was an autumn film until rewatching it now.
That's why we're releasing this in February.
Damn.
And our Valentine's Day special is Stepmom, a movie about two women who hate each other and learn to love one another through cancer.
But that's nice because it's Valentine's Day special is actually about two women. Because who said Valentine's Day has to be for the...
It's Galentine's Day.
It's Galentine's Day. It's a Galentine's Day special.
It is a Galentine's Day special.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. And...
obsessed.
And just to throw in a fact.
Okay.
At the very end, Julia Roberts was apparently going to be played by Molly Ringwald.
Molly Ringwald. I don't believe that at all.
If you go on IMDb and you look at any film, the character was always going to be played by Molly Ringwald.
Oh my God, I was going to say that. It's so weird. Because Molly Ringwald basically was in five movies.
When she was quite young.
And, yeah.
And all of a sudden she's like, she was going to play Baby. And she was going to play like, why is Molly Ringwald up for all these roles and she never gets them?
She never, or maybe she just doesn't want to do them. She just like flakes at the last minute. Like, it
couldn't,
nah.
It couldn't have been anyone else.
No, I think it's just become this thing now that just automatically appears on IMDb
page. Yeah, it's just, it was going to be played by Molly Ringwald.
Yeah, but any movie was made between 1995 and 2005, it was going to be played by Molly Ringwald.
You know, so funny. When I saw that, I really laughed. I was like, yeah, of
course. She's back now. She actually is playing something. She's in the new Feud TV show by Truman Capote.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, oh, she's back.
She's back. She's actually taken one of the many roles she's been offered.
IMDb, she's back.
She's back. IMDb is going to freak out.
Oh, my God.
It's official. Oh, we have to laugh.
You gotta end on a laugh. Come on.
You gotta laugh. So this has been so great. I've loved recording this episode.
I've had such a good time.
What a great morning.
I know. And like, I was a bit like, God, it's funny that I'm a comedian, but I've chosen to
talk about the saddest movie in the world.
I know.
Yeah. Lou Taylor, you are a comedian.
I'm a comedian.
Tell us about that.
I'm a comedian. I'm working on my first hour. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping to take it up to Edinburgh this year. It's called Jeans and a Nice Top.
Love it.
And it's about growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s. So there's a lot of that material in there.
Oh, seems
so
like...
You'll enjoy it, Caroline. You should come.
Oh, I will come.
I'm doing a preview at The Pleasance on the 9th of March.
Oh, I can come to that. Yeah, I'll be there.
7:40.
Yeah,
and yeah, and it's a bit of video. It's like multimedia. Some because I make short sketches as well. Mm. They're all online, so you can see them on my Instagram.
And what's your Instagram?
Lou Taylor Trash. Okay. and yeah, so yeah.
Thanks for having me. I've had so much fun.
Thanks, Lou.
Thanks.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.